This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Non Sequitur. Your facts are uncoordinated.
Hello, welcome back to the show. I'm not used to that abrupt ending. We're gonna play a little game here in just a second, and so there'll be an image that's gonna be over top of now where face palming Mortimer 81 is. And but while we're there, let's say hello to Mortimer 81. How are you today, sir? Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. I'm doing fine.
Excellent. We're glad you're here.
Except
Steve,
the fact that it's 2 a.m. here.
It's 2 a.m. there.
Oh.
Where are you? I didn't know that either. I mean, I don't want to dox you. Just give a regional thing. Oh, you're in Sweden.
Yeah.
I thought you were in the States for some reason.
Oh, so did I. Oh, wow. Well, thank you for staying up.
I appreciate you doing this that late. Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of feel bad now.
Yeah, hope we make it worthwhile for you. I don't want to lose sleep over this because we know how many people that have watched our show have lost sleep after watching some of our shows and participating.
Yeah, that's true. Steve's ready to go. This is a Steve show. We're going to be talking about fallacies and not the kind that I like. So this is going to be a Steve show. But Steve, tomorrow, are you ready?
I'm going to be ready for tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a hell of a day.
I don't think I am. Let's just give you a rundown of what we've got coming up for the next 2 days. This is a big weekend, okay? Not only do we have Mortimer 81 here tonight, but tomorrow, starting at 4 p.m., we have our biweekly Patreon hangouts. So if you are a Patreon, please come and hang out. We're going to be talking about the Golden Nuns, which is going to be coming up in about 2 weeks. Speaking of that, we invite you to go and vote for your favorite content creators all across YouTube. There are two sections to the Golden Nuns. There's a YouTube-wide section and a non-sequitur-specific section, and you can vote accordingly. The YouTube section is fill-in, so you know, your favorite animator, channel, new channel, video of the year. So you'll vote for all of those. I'm getting all kinds of notifications. Oh, by the way, yes, let's answer. It's his birthday today. One of our really, 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 I mean, he's a huge supporter of the show. So happy birthday to you, sir. Thank you for spending it with us. We wish you well. So happy birthday. And, but yeah, so if you go to tinyurl.com/goldennuns, or you can go to our website, nonsecshow.com. And, if you look in the navigation bar, there is a tab for the Golden Nuns. It'll take you straight to there. This will be the last week that we're having the voting for both sections. Next week will be the ones that we that broke it down to the final fours. So you'll be voting on the actual people who will win next week. But the nominations will continue for the rest of this week. Tomorrow, the private hangout at 7 p.m., Jimmy and I will be here for Ad Homies. At 8, Conspiracy Cats will be debating Flat Earth Hero. I love that name. I don't know why, but I love that name, Flat Earth Hero. I think it because it reminds me of Guitar Hero for some reason. I used to love that. That's but anyway, Conspiracy Cats is Conspiracy Cats is an amazing channel. If you haven't checked his channel out, you need to. It's hilarious. The guy's funny. And so he'll be taking on him at 8. And then at 9:30, Red's Rhetoric will be with Scotty. Scotty's returning from the last dumpster fire we had with Scotty. He promises to be better behaved this time and a little bit calmer. So I mean, he says he's going to smoke some weed beforehand. So we'll see if that makes a difference. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., Jim Hall from The Atheist Edge and Richard Carrier will be here. For a Veterans Day show, an Atheist Veterans Day program that we're going to have at 7. And then following that will be the Smoking Nun, as always, at 8. It'll probably be 8:30 this Sunday, but we'll be catching up with our good friend Jilly Juice, and maybe Jeff Holiday will be joining us. So that will be good. One last thing before we start with the discussion for tonight. Tuesday at 8 p.m., Aaron Ra will be back with Jason King. Jason King is a guy that, well, I'm not really sure how he gets to the position that he does, but he's an atheist that believes the world was created. I don't know how you get there, but not only is he an atheist, but he claims that he has mathematical proof for God's existence, which triggered Steve, of course. But you remember that, Steve? That video?
I trigger easily, so yeah, I do.
Yeah, the, sort of. The mathematical proof. Okay. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve, who will actually, before we do that, let's make sure that Mortimer is up to the task tonight to talk about fallacies. All right. Mortimer, on your screen right now is the thumbnail for this episode. Can you name off all of the fallacies that are within contained within that thumbnail?
Well, let's see. Red herring, poisoning the well. Slippery slope.
Yep.
Let's see. I'm not clear on what all of it is supposed to be. Begging the question. Assuming it's that one. Then there's the. Is the resolution supposed to be this bad?
It is on your end because we. For bandwidth,
yeah, because
sake,
of the stream. To,
you know, stream
yeah,
out.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
I expected it was something. So that's about all I can make out, actually.
Okay. Well, I'll take you through the rest of the other ones. The one beside begging the question is circular let reasoning. Then you got it.
We can let the audience try.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Let's see.
That would be just I don't know how we'd keep up with that though. They're getting them though. I mean, you see them. I'm watching them come up.
They're getting it. Yeah.
Cherry picker back there.
They're getting them.
The cherry picker is moving where? The goalpost. Right beside the slippery slope sign. That piece of equipment, that construction equipment, that's called a cherry picker.
Okay. Okay. And then, I didn't know that.
And then my favorite is, or what I think is, this is my little baby, up in the top left corner. That is a hawk made of classified ads. So it's Ad Hawk. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
I don't feel bad, Mortimer, because he showed this to me last night at like 4 o'clock in the morning, right? Oh, and I'm on my laptop and I can't see the advertisement. And I'm like, I don't get it, right? Because I couldn't see what was printed on there.
I thought it was good. That's circular reasoning. He's walking in a circle. Yeah. Okay, so he passes. Mortimer passes. We can continue with the show tonight, thankfully. Steve?
There's one other. Wait, there's one other. Non sequiturs written right there.
We could technically go the stone one because of the mountains or the stone well. So
argumentium from stone. Oh, no, argumentium from stone. There you go.
Yeah.
Appeal to the stone.
All right.
Yes, very good. Wow. All right. Kyle's so good. Right, he didn't even realize that he put ones in there that he didn't even need to put in there. Oh, I don't know what I'm doing now.
I've done enough. But I can just relax for the rest of the
anyways, show. Anyways, Sandring, you're done. You're done. You know, your thanks. But Sandring, happy birthday to you. And happy Veterans Day coming up for those who are veterans. Again, join that stream. We're going to be with Richard Carrier and Atheist Edge. It's going to be amazing. We appreciate all the veterans that served. And I'm going to be out that day earlier having food and eating a lot. And I think David plans the same thing because we get free food that day. And don't turn out free food. But anyways, Martimer, welcome. I've been trying to get you on for a while because you are one of the leading proponents of explaining to people fallacies and how to use them properly. Because I've noticed over especially last year since we've been doing this show and other things that people tend to use fallacies incorrectly. And I'm hoping that we can kind of have you explain maybe some of the most common fallacies people get wrong and maybe some of the more interesting ones and some stories about how we've experienced with people throwing out fallacies and going from there. But first, introduce yourself and tell everybody about your channel because people may not be familiar with you. They should. Yeah,
Martimer 81 is the name of the channel. I started out doing debunking videos, basically debunking creationism and New Age and a little bit of flat earth. I've done as well. What I'm doing right now is more educational stuff. It's not that I've stopped doing debunkings, but it's just what I have time for, basically. But I'm doing a series called Fallacy of the Week. That is supposed to be weekly, but it's not, where I I explain a fallacy in every episode and try to give examples of it and, you know, how the fallacy works and stuff like that.
So which ones do you think you want to start with? I mean, what do you think the most common ones are that people get wrong the most often? I mean, I have two of my particular favorites that normally I see people get wrong all the time, and they're probably the same ones you see. But if you had to start with, like, the first one that you see, probably the most misunderstood, what would it be?
The one that is erroneously called out, you mean?
Yes, yes.
Straw man. Is what I would have to say, because
I hear that all the time.
Straw man is
you're straw manning me.
Yeah, it's when someone misrepresents an argument in order to debunk it easier. You refute an argument that has never actually been made, but rather one that is superficially similar to it. What people usually mean when they call out a straw man. You know, if you look in online discussions, forums, whatever, it's basically you said something I disagree with. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to call that a straw
man. I see
that
frequently. Yeah, I see that quite often. When people disagree with me when I run an argument, if they don't, you know, see it the same way, they for some reason throw out the term straw man. And I'm asking, well, what is it do you think that I'm getting wrong about your argument? Because I don't ever want to purposely straw man somebody. I steel man them as much as possible. I want to get the best argument I can get from somebody, and I want to put forth the best argument. So if somebody thinks I'm actually straw manning them, I really like to know the reasons. And they never give them to you. They're like, that, you know, well, you know, you don't understand this, maybe. I'm like, okay, if that's the case and I'm not purposely straw manning you, just help me understand your argument,
right?
Because right. I'm not going out of my way to try to build an effigy of something that I could just easily burn down,
right? And I think it's important. While technically it's still a straw man, even if it's accidental,
true.
If someone calls it out as a straw man, you know, it could be that I misunderstood something. Give me a chance to correct myself before you accuse me of being dishonest and you know, making a fallacious argument on purpose. And that's something that's so common. People will just jump to the fact, hey, I can call out a fallacy here. But like
do you think it's because they don't understand?
It's not even a straw man.
Yeah, do you think that a lot of people just do it as a defense?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and definitely. And I also noticed
that I don't
like
your argument, so I'm going to call it a straw man. That's
exactly it. Exactly. And I've also noticed people don't often give principle of charity, and the principle of charity is basically if you go into a conversation There's an unspoken thing that you, both people going into the conversation have to abide by certain maxims. They're called Grease's maxims. And one of which is the cooperation principle, that you're going in there to have a honest dialogue, that you're not going to purposely misrepresent your opponent, that you're going to have quality, maxim of quality and quantity and things of that nature, where you try to put out the correct information, right? And you don't want to put out any more or less than necessary to make your case. But have you noticed in your discussions that a lot of times people just think that you're being dishonest, even, you know, because you, they happen to disagree with you? I see that a lot with theologians and atheists, that they think that the theologian or the theist is being dishonest only because they're not agreeing with them.
Yeah, I see that a lot. But on the subject of the principle of charity, actually, I'm going to bring that up in a video eventually. Fallacy of the week. It's not a fallacy, but I'm still going to put it there because I think it belongs there. But the principle of charity. One thing that's extremely important to understand about that. It's not just about being honest and so on. It's also assuming that if your opponent says something that you can interpret in different ways, you interpret it in a charitable way. You don't start attacking him for using the wrong terms, for, you know, using the wrong words. Instead, you try to think, wait a minute, what could he mean by this? And if you can still understand it, you interpret it in a way that actually favors his argument. It's just, it saves both sides so much time. It just makes the conversation a lot more pleasant.
Yeah, and if you're just going to be finding nuances of a particular argument that are not really what are in question, I just find it to be, right. I hate to say disingenuous, but it's definitely a waste of time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, my favorite one, and I agree with you about strawman, by the way, but my favorite one is ad hominem, because I get the most amount of flack on that one. Matter of fact, I'm not going to mention any names. But I just recently, a friend of mine and I got in a very vicious discussion about this particular topic. And I've tried to explain to people, look, at again, if you're going to accuse me of an argument, please go read, or of a fallacy, please go read the fallacy first. I mean, make sure that you have it right, because I don't like accusing people of a fallacy if they didn't commit one. And I don't like being accused of a fallacy if I didn't commit one. And hominem, people seem to misunderstand that. They don't understand the difference between an ad hominem fallacy and somebody throwing out a pejorative or invective or an insult. They're completely vastly different things, right? Can you explain that to people?
Yeah, well, they're related, but they are different things. An ad hominem would be, you are an idiot, therefore your argument is wrong, or your conclusion is wrong, or I'm going to dismiss your argument because you're an idiot. Yep. But simply saying you're an idiot, that's not an ad hominem. That's an insult. I am not using it to refute anything you said. I'm just stating an opinion about you. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference there.
And by the same token, I'm calling you an idiot. Exactly. And if I said, Martimer, hey, if I said, you're wrong because you're an idiot, that's clearly an ad hom. But if I say, hey, Martimer, you're wrong, I'll give you several reasons why you're incorrect, directly relating to the argument, and then I tack on at the end, by the way, you're also an idiot. That's just an add-on insult. Would you agree? If I really wanted to make an argument in a formal debate, somebody could possibly make a case that's poisoning the well in a very formal, structured debate. But I would only call that a fallacy in a very meticulous type setting where you have a very formal thing. That may be the case, but in generalities, that if I just say, hey, Mortimer, you're an idiot, that's not an ad hom fallacy. So,
no.
Yeah. So what are some of the other ones you see that are...
argument from authority.
Ooh. Oh, that was a good one. Thank you.
Not that much, actually. I don't see that one that much. Really? I see... you mean... people accusing people of using that one. Yes, that I see.
So can you clarify that one? Because I get that one a lot when I cite experts. When I cite a paper that I've read, and they say, well, that's argument to authority, which it is, by the way, but it's not a fallacious
argument. Exactly.
It's a legitimate.
Right. an appeal to authority is fallacious when it's a false authority. That's one case. And the other is when you assume that because the authority, even if it's a legit authority, made the claim, then it must be true. But
right, or they haven't had a chance to evaluate it.
Yeah, well, hey, Stephen Hawking said this. It's about physics. Yeah, I think he's probably right. That's not a fallacy. On the other hand, saying Stephen Hawking said this, therefore it is so. That's fallacious. And also saying, hey, Joe down the street said so. It's about physics. He has never taken a physics class in his life. But yeah, it's Joe, so it must be true, you know. No, that's a false authority. I like to call it the mom says so fallacy.
Yeah, the same token, if I were to say, hey, Stephen Hawking said this, therefore I am right, that's also a fallacy. Because you're just using these as supportive information, right? These things are actually to support your argument. They're not going to confirm them. I can't ever say Dr. X said this, therefore I'm right, as confirmation. What I can only say is I believe my argument is right. I've had these people look into it. Therefore, it is a little bit more substantiated than a normal, you know, just average people looking at it. And it should be evaluated as such. But that's all. That's when you write a paper, what do? You cite your sources. We've all wrote papers in college.
Yeah.
You all cite them. We've all taken
sources so that you cite sources so that it can be checked, not so that you can tell which authority you're arguing from.
Agreed. Somebody actually came up with a new
so that someone can check.
Yeah, exactly. They can reference. Somebody actually came up with a new fallacy. You want to run with it? It's yours. It's called laughing at spirit science is an ad martimum. So we're going to call that spirit science ad martimum. That's actually pretty good. Like that's pretty creative. Yeah, I like it.
I like it.
We don't mind creating new fallacies here. I think it's great.
How is that a fallacy, though?
Oh, let me think. Well, let's think about that. Well, because you're laughing at him and not addressing his argument, I guess.
But I am addressing what he said.
By laughing at it. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. See how I'm not seeing how that's fallacious either. But we can work with that. There's potential there. Maybe we can maybe figure something out.
It's a good. Go ahead. Two Quoque is another good one that somebody brought up in the live chat.
Yeah, I love Two Quoque.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like committing it, but I mean, can you kind of explain Two Quoque for people?
Yeah, that's basically calling out hypocrisy. You do this too. Therefore,
so therefore it must be wrong.
Right back at you. Therefore, you're a person who smokes says don't smoke. Well, you do. Therefore, smoking is harmless. That would be Two Quoque.
Right. Yeah, so if I'm smoking I'm advocating the position smoking is bad for you, just because I'm having a performance issue with the argument that I'm actually smoking doesn't distract from the fact that smoking is bad for you. It's a Two Quoque to call that out.
Right,
Huh?
I have a question. Is there ever a time that you can commit a fallacy and still be right in your argument?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Under what circumstances? Called a fallacy.
Or somebody called it.
That's the fallacy. The fact that an argument is fallacious does not say anything about the conclusion of it. It just means that the argument fails to confirm the conclusion.
Cool.
I see that one frequently as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, people will call out, if you take the ad hominem example, here's a perfectly good argument, and you tack on, and by the way, you're an idiot. Then people will say, hey, ad hominem, therefore your argument is fallacious. It has nothing to do with it, even though that's not an ad hominem, but even if we accepted it as an ad hominem, so what? That still doesn't refute the argument. It just means that you have failed to prove the conclusion.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that's one of the most frequently thing that I've seen quite often, is that people will say, well, you have this fallacy in this particular argument, therefore your entire argument's wrong. It's like, well, no, you're not refuting the conclusion. I mean, if I said to you the sky is blue because of some fallacy, right? Because you're an idiot, the sky is blue or something. And you say, well, I don't accept your conclusion that the sky is blue. It's kind of absurd, right? The conclusion still can be true. It just doesn't mean, it just means that your argument doesn't logically make it so that if the premises are true, that your conclusion must be true. So it doesn't mean the conclusion isn't true, though. That's the fallacy. And I do see that frequently. I just automatically want to dismiss the conclusion based upon the fact that somebody might have a flaw in the argument, which, again, yes, you can say that the argument doesn't conclude that, but you can't say the conclusion isn't true if it clearly the conclusion is true in a situation like that. Yeah. Did you agree?
Yeah.
Man, we have all these people they have questions galore. This is like the most amount of questions I've ever seen in an episode, to be honest with you. Wow. People are all kinds of things. So I don't even know where to begin. Circularity. People want to know about circularity, mm-hmm. like what it means to have a circular argument or begging the question.
And Steve, we can go ahead and read the as we go along with the super chats for tonight's episode, because they're all dealing with what we've got going on. So if you want to, you can break in that way too.
Yeah, let me. I'm going to be pulling it up right now while he answers that particular question. We can go from there. Yeah, do that. You want to briefly kind of explain what begging the question or circular argument would be?
Yeah, a circular argument is when you assume the conclusion before you even begin. So you have to accept the conclusion of the argument in order to reach the conclusion. The classic example would be a theist citing the Bible as proof of God, because the Bible says that God exists and it's the word of God because it says so.
Yeah, I agree. I think the distinction needs to be made. Yeah, I just think the distinction needs to be made. If the theist says, here's my evidence for God, and they use something like the Bible, I don't have a problem with that. That's not circular. It is circular, however, where, like exactly what you said, when they say, well, this is the word of God, therefore it must be true because it's the word of God. Begging the question would be if you can form a conclusion from any single premise in your argument is begging the question. And that's the distinction that people need to make, because a lot of people I notice say, well, you can't use the Bible as evidence for God, because that's the claim. And I actually disagree with that. It may not be good evidence to people, it might be weak evidence, but they're submitting it as something to be evaluated. You can dismiss it and say, you know what, I think it's bad evidence. That's fine. But that's what they're using as evaluation of the position that God exists. And that they're not, if they say that God exists because this is true, the Bible's true, therefore God exists, that is fallacious.
Yeah.
There's a subtle nuance there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're going for, and I agree. It wouldn't be fallacious to simply say God exists because the Bible says so. That's not a fallacy. That's just an argument that I can easily dismiss. But if you were to go on and say, we know that the Bible is true because it's the word of God, then it's circular.
Right, that's fallacious.
Because it assumes the existence of God. And, well, that's what you're trying to prove.
I totally agree. All right, so let's get some super chats out of the way. Sandring, thank you very much. I know what you're writing is not real English, so I'm not going to pronounce any of this stuff, because I know it's, I think you're just,
I'll try
the keyboard here, hopefully, because this is the real language. I'm so confused. Go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Kasta Nuk Joy.
I think that's the closest we're going to get to a translation. But anyways, Hassandring, $20 for a super chat. Thank you. And another super chat for $20 of Sandring, and another $20 from a Sandring. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. If you got questions, though, put them in the live chat so we can answer them, Sandring. But anyways, Time says $2. Everyone knows ad populum arguments are the worst. Oh, that's a good one too, man. argumentum ad populum, how they get that wrong when you say, you know, the scientific consensus is this. Oh, that's argumentum ad populum. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
You want to explain why, Martimer?
There's a reason why. it's not the popularity that makes it correct. It's the reason why it's popular among scientists. Namely, because they have a lot of experts evaluating the evidence and coming to the same conclusion. That doesn't mean that it is the popularity that makes it true.
Exactly. And by the way, that's Klingon, I guess, I found out. Tells you how much I know about Klingon. All I know is grok, which is that stuff that they eat, which was the little slimy little serpents. But yeah, so this is actually Klingon. So I don't speak that. I don't think Kyle does. So we're probably butchering that to no end. I like to have a translation of that because I like to know what he actually said. It's probably like, fuck you guys. You know, you guys all suck. It's that kind of shit, which would be awesome for misandering. But I don't know what any of these things mean, my friend. But anyways, yeah, so with the argumenting ad populum, they do think that scientific consensus is that for some strange reason, even though it's explicitly said that it's not. And also, they seem to will throw out an ad populum fallacy when you say, look, I've talked to a lot of people, just lay people. They seem to, you know, agree and understand the argument. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, if I say I talked to a bunch of people and they all agree, therefore I'm right. Now you have an ad populum argument, right?
Yes.
Same thing if I said, like, you know, Justin Bieber sold a lot of albums, therefore he must be a good singer. That's ad populum, right? Because that doesn't necessarily mean he's a good singer. Right. So it's when you draw this conclusion, when you draw an inference that something's true or false, that's more likely when you're going to have an error, right? But if I just say, hey, you know, evolution is a confirmed model and it's most likely the most best explanation, or it is the best explanation we have for it. It doesn't necessarily have to be the case because it has falsifiability. That's not ad populum.
No.
And let's see, Echidnu $5 again. Must be liking this. Says this for Duffer, my avatar, but don't say it. Oh, never mind. He tells me not to read something out loud that I was about to read out loud. Don't do that. woof.
I have funny. I just want to, was that all the super chats so far, Steve? Because I have something that I want to I kind of want to do with the two of you real quick. Okay, ooh, so I put together a list there are four real fallacies here, and then there are four false fallacies here. So Steve and Mortimer, we'll see which of you two can pick out the ones that are real and the ones that are false. All right. Alphabet soup. Trust your gut. Dog whistle. The F-bomb. I wish I had a magic wand. Infotainment. Oops. And the scoring.
Okay, we'll have to kind of go through one more time. The F-bomb is a real fallacy. Go through each one. Alphabet soup. All I heard was like F-bomb. Alphabet soup.
Okay. Alphabet soup.
Is that like word salad? If that means like word salad, then yes. Okay.
All right. Marmory, you think it's real?
Things like have like a thousand different names.
Yeah, I seem to recognize it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's either like word salad or if like an insult to like an ad hom attack.
It is a the alphabet soup is. Let me find my page. Oh, the alphabet soup is a corrupt, modern implicit fallacy from ethos in which a person inappropriately overuses acronyms, abbreviations, form numbers, and arcane insider shop talk.
Interesting. That's alphabet soup. Interesting. I mean, It's like I said, some of these have like 50 different names.
Doesn't really
them.
Tell me why it's a fallacy, but yeah, exactly.
I don't know why it's a fallacy from that either. I mean, if you use those terminologies as an ad hom,
it seems to be going in the direction of argument from gibberish, which is basically
nonsensicality or word salad. Right.
It says right here that nonsense. Therefore, I'm right. You're expecting the opponent not to be able to analyze it, so they just accept the conclusion.
It's also
what Deepak Chopra does.
It's also known as argumentation for boss.
You use all of You use all of those to prove to an audience that he, she speaks their language and is one of them, and to shut down, confuse, or impress outsiders. So an example of that would be, it's not uncommon for a K-12 with ASD to be both GT and LD. I guess it's using the lingo based on, you know, whatever subject that you're trying to convey in an effort to win the audience
when,
over.
When you're talking to someone who or arguing against someone who has no understanding of the jargon, so they just have no choice but to accept it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally can see that. You know who does that? Like William Lane Craig would do something like that, right? Because he threw out these things where it's like, hey, nobody's going to understand this, therefore it must be the case. I had somebody do that the other day, a Thomist, right? Thomists love doing that. People that go to Thomism, they love throwing out words like actuality and potentiality and qualia and all these other words in this esoteric type terminology, thinking that the other person won't know enough about the topic to even try to refute it. I think that's, I can see how it could be a fallacy, but it's more disingenuous than anything else, because if you're purposely using those terminologies just to confuse people, then you're not having a discussion. You're not having a dialectic at that point, right? You want people to understand you. So why would you go out of your way to use terminology that they don't understand?
Or you're playing to win.
Well, I don't get it. But anyways, what was the next one? Dog whistle? Yes, that's using politics frequently. Dog whistle politics, man. That's like one of the most common things people use
familiar with it.
I hear this one a lot in politics.
As a fallacy, I'm not familiar with it.
It is an extreme version of reductionism and sloganeering in the public sphere, a contemporary fallacy of logos and pathos in which a brief phrase or slogan of the hour, for an example, abortion, the 1%, 9/11, Zionism, Islamic terrorism, fascism. I guess it's just...
It's supposed to have a rise. These words have a implied thing to them because they've been utilized in such a way, right? When you use a specific racist word, everybody knows that's a racist word. But other words that are not overtly racist, but they mean something that most people would understand to be either racist or have appeal to an emotion type thing, that's when they use dog whistle politics, because you know what a person's implying, even though they're not directly saying it, to try to raise the ire of the base.
Yeah. Okay.
Trump gets accused of that a lot. The people in the media accuse him of that all the time.
Sure. He does. Yeah. He just called the people from like Guatemala, it's like that, invaders. That's dog whistle politics, man.
The next one is the F bomb. Is that a fallacy?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely one.
Mortimer?
I don't know what it refers to in the context of fallacies.
Well, the F-bomb is a fallacy, and that would be it is an adolescent fallacy of pathos attempting to defend or strengthen one's argument with unrelated sexual, obscene, vulgar, crude, or profane language.
Yeah. That would be a fallacy, yeah.
And by the way, what I did was I went through the master list on this website of fallacies, and there are literally almost 100.
Oh, there's more than I can remember. There's more fallacies I can ever remember in my life.
Yeah, I've seen lists with like 300 or something.
Yeah,
of course, many of them. So many of them are different names for the same things.
Thank you. Exactly. That's the problem.
There are very subtle differences between them. So, yeah.
I wish I had a magic wand.
Never heard of it.
It sounds like something I remember reading, but unfortunately,
I don't know. Wishful thinking is a fallacy, if that's what it refers to.
Is that something you want to go back and change time, or you want to change something in your argument, or you regret saying something that you may have wished you would have like said differently or something?
Sort of. It's the fallacy of regretfully and falsely proclaiming oneself powerless to change a bad or objectionable situation over which one has power. For example, what can we do about gas prices? As Secretary of Energy, I wish I had a magic wand, but I don't. Shrug.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense. So basically, they're not even addressing the argument, I think, at that point. They're just saying, I wish I could change this, but I can't, so therefore, whatever. Okay, that makes sense.
We got two more. We'll go to Mortimer first here. Infotainment. Yeah. Do you think infotainment is a fallacy?
I don't see how it could be.
I happen to love this one, actually.
It probably is, yes. Because I'm not familiar with how the word is used in that context.
You probably wouldn't. Yeah, you probably wouldn't. This is something unless you really know.
I tried to find the ones that were rare, like the ones on this list. I tried to pick out the ones that I think would be the most.
I can tell.
Well, the reason we know this one is we actually have experience with this particular fallacy indirectly.
This is my favorite. This is my favorite.
Yeah.
The infotainment fallacy is a very corrupt and dangerous modern media-driven fallacy that deliberately and knowingly stirs in facts, news, falsities, and outright lies with entertainment, a mixture usually concocted for specific base, ideological, and profit-making motives, i.e. InfoWars.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Alex Jones, baby.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, you got to admit, that's a neologism. That is such a new type fallacy, right? But it makes sense. And that's why I like people that come up with new fallacies, because if there's a reason to have them, they're great, right? Informal fallacies are great, which, by the way, I think we still need to probably go into the difference between formal and informal. But yeah, this is fun.
Oh, we can. I just got two more. The next one is the oops fallacy. This is so easy. Don't overthink it. You want to take a shot at it? Don't overthink it.
You know me. That's what I do. I overthink. The simple stuff I get wrong.
No, I have no idea what it refers to. I made a mistake. Therefore, what?
Is this when you're in an argument? Well, this goes back to like the other one. Maybe like if I was in an argument and you're doing a Socratic thing, and then I say, "Hey, look at, I wish I would have asked you that question instead," or something like that.
No, it's literally as simple as it sounds. The oops is also the I forgot. Fallacy, a corrupt argument from logos in which toward the divisive end of a discussion, debate, trial, electoral campaign period, or decision-making process, an opponent suddenly, elaborately, and usually sarcastically shams having just remembered or uncovered some salient fact, argument, or evidence. For an example, oops, I forgot to ask you, you were convicted of this same offense twice before, weren't you? So it's like it's feigning forgetting an important fact.
It's also this is called the October surprise, actually.
That's what happens. That's one of its
politics. Yeah,
that's one of its names.
Because in politics, that's what happens when they specifically go out of the way to hold on to something until the election in order to make it more impactful.
And the last one that I have on here, the snow job fallacy.
Yeah, I have a tendency to commit that one probably. Marty, these are really oddball ones, actually.
I haven't heard of any of them.
Yeah, Kyle does that. The snowball fallacy is when you basically overstrain things and you actually snow job. Yeah, you're basically piling on just so much stuff to tack on. You're over, mansplaining would be a good example of snow job fallacy.
I put that in there for you, Steve.
I know you did. Yeah. I could tell already. Thank you. I'll take the hit on that one. Sure.
You know, because every non sequitur episode, everybody gets a snow job. So at least you get that when you leave.
Snow jobs for everybody.
Back over to you, Steve. You can do the informal. That was formal.
Yeah, let's discuss that a little bit because I think it's good to actually give a distinction between the two. These are informal fallacies, meaning that we are discussing reasons why the argument itself may not be true from the conclusion falling from the premises, but they're also what's called logical fallacies. Do you want to dive into that real quick for people?
Well, a logical fallacy or a formal fallacy, that's when, how do you explain this? It's when you can grant the premises, but the conclusion still doesn't follow. An informal fallacy can be fixed by adding a premise. It's usually that it is assumed that there's some premise that is so obvious that we don't even have to point it out. Like in the ad hominem, it is assumed that Well, if you're an idiot, you must be wrong.
Yeah, I would tack on so like a formal logical fallacy would be in the structure itself, right? Like the other day.
Yeah, exactly.
One of our favorite flat earthers, he had said something along the lines that Steve doesn't understand, quote, Monin's pollens. And I was like, okay, first of all, I didn't know whether to determine whether he was talking about Monin's tollens or Monin's ponens. I went with Monin's ponens. Found out later, mm-hmm. I think he was talking about Monin's tollens. I actually corrected that comment to him because you never know what a flat earther is thinking, right? But he conflated them together and came up with Monin's pollens. And I'm like, that's hilarious because you're telling me I don't know. But that'd be a logical structure, right? If I have in the form P implies Q, P therefore Q, that's always logically valid. Yeah. And I was just in a group not long ago on Facebook trying to explain that premise. If I said something along the lines of, if the moon is made of green cheese, I am a moose. The moon is made of green cheese, therefore I am a moose. That is logically valid. People are arguing that is not logically valid or just wrong. It is completely logically valid. It is P implies Q, P therefore Q, right?
There's nothing wrong with the structure of the argument, no. It's just the premises are ridiculous. But that has nothing to do with the logical structure. So yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. When you see people committing logical errors, which ones do you often see the most? Because I usually see that they try to have a structured argument, but they end up having a non sequitur, literally, because their conclusion doesn't fall from the premises.
Affirming the consequence is one that I see all the time.
You want to explain that one?
If A, then B. B, therefore A. So you sort of you reverse them.
It's basically the same thing as...
If A implies B, then it's...
Right, you're denying the antecedent, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it basically would be saying that P implies Q, Q therefore P would be affirming the antecedent. Affirming the antecedent. And there's and the other one would be denying the consequence.
Affirming the consequence.
Steve, did you have anything else as far as the fallacies that you want to go to? Because I wanted to talk about some of the works that Mortimer does on his channel, like a little bit of how he selects who he's going to do for spot. So Mortimer, I've mm-hmm. followed your channel for a while, and I absolutely loved when you call out the that pastor that you always go after. I forget his name. What's the guy's name that you it's the one that you always call it. He's a lying. He's a like an
event. Jason Lyle.
Yes.
Dr. Jason Lyle. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Dr. Lyle. Liar.
That's one of. Right. Right. So, how do you decide? You know, everybody's got their kind of process when they just do a response video. What's yours? Like, what do you look for when? What about Lyle? Spoke to you that you needed to go after him?
Yeah, well, it was about physics and specifically astronomy, which is, I mean, I'm a physics teacher. So I'm big on physics, I'm big on math, and astronomy, astrophysics, they're sort of my favorite parts of physics. So that's important, that it's a subject that I'm interested in. And it's also important that I have a decent grasp of the subject in question. I never feel comfortable addressing someone who's talking about biology because I suck at it. For example. So, then there's always, you know, what do I want to teach my audience? Is there something that sometimes I go looking for someone who has said something stupid about this specific topic because I want to talk about it. And it's a fun way to give quick lessons to people when you present it in the context of, look at this moron who said something this incredibly stupid.
Yes. And who have you found? Who have you found to be the biggest moron that you've kind of done response videos to?
Well, that has to be Jordan of Spirit Science. He's just a gold mine of stupid.
And for people who might familiar.
He's basically a new age sort of almost cult leader who makes these videos where he's a pretty talented cartoonist. So he makes these cartoon videos who are really cute looking, but they're so full of stupid. Every sentence, just, you know, brain cells are jumping out your ears. No.
I'm not convinced he actually buys into his own bullshit. I think he's full of crap.
Believes it. I don't think it's that he doesn't believe it. I think he doesn't care. He just wants to say things and have people shower him with praise for saying something that sounds really clever, which it, of course, doesn't. But, you know, people are idiots.
That happens a lot, actually. So, exactly.
If someone is still unaware of what Jordan has said that I keep harping on about, it's that Jews are from space.
What?
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, okay. It is true. I mean, I'm Jewish, by heritage. It's my mom, so
we have to dive into this a little bit. I feel like we have to dive into this a little bit.
About the hidden truth about human history that they don't want you to know. Jeez, you know, the big they don't want you to know. And okay, so Atlantis was real, and people who lived on Atlantis were immortals and had superpowers. And by the way, at some point the Martians invaded, and also, Jews are from space, and the
secret's out.
Piling on, and the Egyptians were telekinetic, because statues of Egyptian pharaohs are 60 feet tall, that means that that's how tall the people were.
Clearly. Yeah.
I have to tell you this, Marvel. We did have a guy on here one time. Do you know who Brian Forrester is?
Doesn't ring a bell.
He's big into the ancient civilizations, ancient aliens world. Like he's got a big channel that kind of focuses on that. But we had him on here a couple months ago, and to go along with what you were saying about the Egyptians, he literally said that there were, and Steve can back me up on this, that there were Wi-Fi obelisks that they had, Wi-Fi enabled obelisks.
Yeah, but
we don't know the frequency of their ass, so
hidden on the pyramids.
Airship. We didn't get any technical
details. Fly in space, by the way.
Yeah, an airship. They were flying.
That's something to me. Willie. Mm-hmm. You know, there are the hieroglyphs that have the airplane and spaceship on it. So that's proof right there. You've seen that, Steve, right?
The helicopter on Abydos is actually two symbols. We're on something else, if I remember. They're two symbols that are put together. But then they also have these little symbols that are air, that like they've made out of like material gold, I think they were. But it was like an airplane, but it's not. It's a bumblebee. So it's just... People read into what they want, right? But I still don't. I still don't know what frequency they're at for the Wi-Fi. And have we found an Egyptian laptop yet? That's all I'm kind of curious, because that'd be really cool.
Obviously, that's what they're hiding under the Paul of the Sphinx in the great Hall of Records, Steve. It's under the Sphinx Paul. Obviously, that's where the laptops are.
It's a LAN.
So there are people that are saying some things about this in the comments, and so we spoke a little bit about it before we came on, but you have a video and you have an interesting approach, I think, with Flat Earth. You know, we deal with that a lot on our channel, but and you actually have some videos on it as well. But you take a very hands-off approach when it comes to engaging flat, which I find interesting. And, you know, yeah. if we could go back, maybe, Steve, we would maybe follow suit with that, because we kind of got lost in that rabbit hole. But what's your overall conclusion about that movement in terms of why it's kind of gaining momentum and spreading?
Yeah, the reason I choose not to interact with them, I simply address, here's what I've heard them say, and here's how I respond to that. And I didn't even link to any of them specifically. You know, this is the flat earther who said this. The reason is that I don't want to give them any attention, because I think a lot of them they're just doing it to get attention. I don't know if they believe their own bullshit or if they don't. I think they don't care about it. It has nothing to do with the shape of the earth. It has to do with being contrarian. It has to do with getting others who are also mind-numbingly stupid and ignorant about all the relevant subjects to shower them with praise for saying something that they think sounds like it makes sense. And makes them feel smart. And it just, yeah.
It's got to get under your skin,
yeah,
though.
You know.
Yeah.
Oh, got a little bit of lag. Go ahead, Steve.
Oh, I was just going to say that, yeah, you know, I've always said, and I know Kyle has also said, that one of the reasons we think a lot of people get into this type of flat earth and spirit science and all this kind of nonsensical stuff is that, hate to say it, and this is, you know, merely my opinion, take it for what it's worth, but some people are just naturally stupid, and they want to think that they know things that other people don't know. They want to feel special in some ways. And by the way, I can't say that I'm excluded from that. In years ago, when I was a theist, there is a point there where you say, you know what, I know something about reality that the average person doesn't know, right? I have a knowledge about the divinity that the average person doesn't know, right? And it doesn't really give you an air of moral superiority in some ways. Some people it can, but it gave me, you know, more of a, God, I wish people would know more about this, because I kind of feel sorry for them, right? And I think that flat earthers, yeah, and things of that caliber, they're stupid to begin with, and that they don't want to take the time to actually try to even properly educate themselves, or they lack the ability to do so. Those people I don't find as fault as much as the people that I think probably have the potential to, but willfully don't. Those I hold to a higher standard of accountability. But I do think that they go out of their way to say these kind of things because they want this air of an intellectual superiority over the average person that they normally can't get. And I've been saying that for ages.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of them are also people who probably have no real understanding of how science education works. Likely they were very bad at it in school, or were homeschooled, or didn't even go to a proper school at all. They are under the impression that science is taught the way religious dogma is taught. Here's what the book says. Here's the test. And the question is, what did the book say? Write the answer. Oh, okay. You can parrot facts. Because that's how religious dogma is taught. What does this Bible verse say? You know, what does God think about homosexuals? What, you know, how did Jesus die? It's just facts to be parroted. There's no understanding involved. That's not how science is taught. But unfortunately, I think in some places it is. Because...
Yeah, no, totally.
Science education in parts of the world sucks, but you know, if you actually study science properly, you will. This approach to, you know, just memorize facts, it does not work. You won't get a single point on a test if you just memorize facts. You have to be able to figure things out, test things, evaluate things. And that's the distinction. And if you don't understand this distinction, then it's easy to say that, oh, you're just swallowing what NASA is telling you to believe.
Oh, that's my favorite. It's a lot to me. I think it's a combination of a persecution complex. For some reason, mm-hmm. they feel like they've been wronged, they've been lied to, and now they're the only ones with this knowledge that they have to, you know, go and share with the rest of the world. But in another sense, I noticed that there was an article that I read about the decline in religion has led to the kind of increase in conspiracies theories or people that kind of filling that void. So how do you separate that? How do you not fall for the religious aspect, but then not get caught up in needing that other, that filler?
Yeah. I've actually given this a bit of thought, and the thing is, unfortunately, I think a lot of people need religion. It's just that it should be organized, moderate religion. The dumbest thing you can do with people like that, in my humble opinion, is cut them off from religion altogether, or, you know, persuade them that religion is total bullshit, which it is, but they obviously don't agree with that. Because what you'll do then is basically tell them to go get their fix somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And they will get it on some conspiracy forum online where there is no priest who belongs to an organized religion that can make sure that they all are taught the same things under controlled conditions where they are basically, they're taught, you know, this and this is true, but that's not long. Don't take that too far in that direction. You know, there's some sort of control that can, you know, most Christians are not complete morons. They're not complete assholes. Most of them are perfectly decent people who are not fanatics. But, you know, cut them off from their churches. Where are they going to go? They still have that, like you said, that void that needs to be filled. If they're all going to go around trying to find whatever fits that void, they're going to start believing in complete nonsense, or they're going to be radicalized.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a legitimate point to make, actually.
I definitely agree
that, you know, on your analysis, that we as science people, you know, my background was slightly in physics as well, even though I don't remember crap. So please don't ask me any technical questions about physics. I know the basics. Give me about maybe, you know, like a 2-year student. So, I mean, I don't know the upper echelon physics any longer. But when people reference things like a scientific book, then we say, look, this is the information we're putting out. You can reference this textbook, you can reference this source, and that's fine. But when you have somebody doing it from a biblical perspective, that's what they're used to. That's all they think, you know, it works. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm right. This is what it says in the Bible. But the Bible is interpreted. I mean, you can do exegesis and hermeneutics and all this stuff and say, okay, I'm looking at it this way, that way. But it's not definitive as what we think of as in science as a reputable source for factual information. Now, you can say that certain events happen in the Bible. Totally cool with that, right? But the other things are faith-based, and there's no question about it. And I agree with you 100%. People, I have no problem with religion when it comes to that. I have no problem with people having beliefs. Never been a thing of mine. I only am concerned when those beliefs affect society in a way, such as younger creationism, flat earth, and they're being indoctrinated in the school system, and people are taught false information that I can literally show is wrong. You mentioned Dr. Lyle, who I've been trying to get on forever. You know, he won't do it. I'd love to talk to him about his asynchronous light theory with some physicists, but that kind of information I find to be destructive.
Yeah. Agreed.
And by the way, do you know who Dr. Humphreys is? Are you familiar with that name? Dr. Russell Humphreys? Mm-hmm. People may not know this, but Dr. Russell Humphreys just literally put a paper paper, quote unquote, to the Journal of Creation this quarter, where he mentions me, and the editor of the Journal of Creation actually has a blurb about the Great Debate community and me, and as a critic that has facilitated conversations with helium fusion rates, with Dr. Hinke and Dr. Lachey. So if you want to go check that out, I'll have that available to you guys. But that's I think
what is the Journal of Creation, awesome. Steve.
What is Journal of Creation comes out of? I think it comes out 3 times a year, and they basically have argumentation for things like the rate program. They have argumentation for what they would say gives evidence for young Earth creationism. And by the way, there's no real true peer review process for them. Don't get me wrong, but I have found out through Dr. Lachey, his first name is hard to pronounce sometimes for me, but that they actually do have some kind of process that they go through. I mean, he actually submitted a paper.
Oh no, they don't.
No, I dude, check it. Dr. Lachey, who's a very legitimate geophysicist and really, really brilliant, he submitted a refutation, and they went through and they highlighted and notated, and they, yeah, no, so they do some kind of review, and they want him to resubmit it, and hopefully he has also acknowledged in the credits me as well, but there is some kind of least review they do, but it's obviously not the same kind of peer review process. But Dr. Hemphries has noticed us. I'm trying to get the same thing for Dr. Lyle. So if we can get Dr. Lyle to notice us, would you want to have a conversation with him? I can make that happen.
Probably not. I don't know. We'll see. Okay.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Not as about it.
No, these sort of debates / conversations / discussions, that's not really my thing, because you have to, the way I feel about doing, well, let's just call it live debates, mm-hmm. is that it seems to only benefit the side that is wrong, because it's a contest in rhetorics. The facts speak for themselves. They don't need to be presented in a debate format.
That's deep. It's still entertainment, though.
And true. That's profound. Deep. And
yeah,
true.
It's entertainment. But then you have to be a good debater, and I'm not used to debating.
Yeah, you know, it's for some, and you raise a good point, though. You raise a point that I've never thought of before. That is very true, though. It does only benefit the side that's wrong.
There's a reason why creationists want to debate, and scientists are saying, look, let's do science instead.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. I'm going to have to ponder on that now. I feel like I just got smacked in the face with wisdom.
No, but I will say that there are situations when there can be a debate that where a creationist, for example, is completely destroyed in a debate. I mean, of course that's always fun to see, and I'm sure there are a few minds that can be changed in that way, but generally speaking, the only one who has anything to gain from a debate is the side that knows that they're wrong, because they can't present anything other than rhetorical tricks.
Yeah. Steve actually had a guy that he debated about young Earth creationism, the same day, actually, come back into the hangout and tell him that he was right, and he went from young Earth creationism to evolution. So, I mean, Steve, you got one thing that very rarely happens.
I've had more. Yeah, actually. Hunter Bailey used to be a young Earth creationist until he met me. Believe it or not,
I'm sure it happens.
It's very rare, though.
No, I've seen a debate between William Lane Craig and Lawrence Krauss, and I felt no matter how I twist and turn that debate, Craig won, and he's wrong completely. He was just a better debater,
Krauss,
and that's
not
why
a good
he won.
I'm sorry.
No,
yeah,
exactly.
Krauss is not good.
So what was the point of that debate? Why, if you're not a good debater, don't accept the debate, just present the facts instead.
Krauss just has
with you on that, actually.
he just has a need, I think, to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he cares whether or not he's a good debater or not. He just wanted to get out there and put forth what he knows. You know, whether it be a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he does give the impression, and I've actually talked to him on one occasion, and he does give the impression of being, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, in case he's listening, which I doubt.
I doubt it, but hopefully.
I doubt it.
I love his other stuff. I love his science. I'm a huge fan of him. Don't get me wrong. Yeah,
but he comes off as a completely arrogant asshole, and. Yep. That suits him in the context of science. He's completely unapologetic. It's just, you know, well, here's how it is. You don't like it?
Yep.
Go away. And that attitude, like, I can appreciate that in a scientist, but in a debater, sure. No.
Right. You gotta be. You gotta try to persuade people. I mean, he can back it up, though. That's the thing. Like, if you're an asshole, that when you know with what you're saying, you can back up. With the facts and evidence, then that's one thing. But like you said, when you're in a debate, your job is to try to persuade the people who are either on the other side or in the middle. You know, specifically in the middle, try to sway them more your way. And if you come,
and also you can't present facts in a debate; you can just assert them. You don't have time to explain. You don't have time to educate people about general relativity or quantum mechanics in a debate.
That's true.
You can just say, here's what the science says. Okay. Well, the audience is not going to
believe
you.
That's all an average person could do too, right? But just an average person who doesn't know the science. I mean, we don't expect everybody to have a deep understanding of quantum mechanics or evolution. None of us do. We have a tertiary kind of understanding of them, a very third level. I'm not a quantum physicist. I'm not a biologist. I just know what I know from college and my own readings. But I have a really, I think, decent understanding of a base level, right? And so I have a foundation to build upon. But the average person who may not know these topics, all they have to do is go cite the references. If they, you know, they don't have to argue for it. They're going to say, look, here's what it says here. I argue with the person that the experts, right? Because I don't think people understand. They have no onus to defend evolution. You know, they can just say, I accept evolution because what I read makes sense to me. It's fair. There you go. Okay, done.
Right. Great. Yeah. And that's not going to be very helpful in a debate, though.
Right.
No, not at all.
That's very true.
Right. And I think that Krauss and Dawkins both suffer from that, philosophically speaking. They're so dogmatic in science, which, and again, I respect, but when it comes to philosophy and things like that, there's a lot of pause I have with them, to say the least.
They're very dismissive of when it comes to philosophy.
Yep.
And I don't like that.
I agree. Well, Martimer, we're going to kind of wind things down and do the last little bit of super chats that we have. We've kept you up way past 2 o'clock. Once again, we apologize for that. We really thought that you were over here in the States with us, had no clue you were staying up till 2 o'clock for us, but we really do appreciate that. Steve, it's do you want? I know we're going to let you go. I promise. I wanted to let you know, though, that there was somebody in the chat named Time. He's one of our moderators, and he said that you were part of the reason he deconverted. So that's how I always like seeing that, you know, when people are on. I think that's really cool. Steve, you want
thanks to – for letting me know.
Absolutely.
No problem. You want
to close out with the super chats?
Yeah, last couple ones. Ascending again for another 20 says, how lame am I that sending Klingon super chats is the highlight of my birthday? Oh, man. Dude, come pick me up, man. Go. You drive. Come pick me up, and we'll go have a beer together, buddy. I'm down for that.
Spend your all of your money on you, sir. Buy the bar out. We do appreciate
the super chats. Go to a bar and buy everybody a shot. To you,
but spend it on you, sir. It's your birthday. Go ahead, Steve.
He says he has a drive in the morning. That's why he's not drinking, if I remember. And the goddess Irwin, my favorite straw man of all time. By the way, who just recently got married. Congratulations, or my condolences, however you think about marriage. $2. Yes, to Mrs. Snarky. $2. Love Martimer 81. He effing rocks. There you go.
He does.
Thank you.
He absolutely does.
He does.
All right. I'm a huge Marvel, fan, actually. Well, we'll let you have the last couple words to let everybody know where they can find you, follow you on social media, all that good stuff. And if you have anything coming up that you want to let everybody know about, feel free.
Yeah, well, Fallacy of the Week coming up weekly, I hope. I've also got some responses to a creationist talk that I'm working on. I've recorded it. I'm trying to edit it, but it's just taking forever, and family and work keeps getting in the way. But it should be coming up a couple of videos this month that are not fallacy videos. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at MortimerM81, because apparently Mortimer81 was taken, which surprised the hell out of me. It's Mortimer.
I hate that when I have
M81. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, I'm YouTube Mortimer81. So, yeah, that's about it.
Awesome. Do you take suggestions for? You, like if I give you a fallacy, will you maybe make a video about it? I mean, you don't, you're no obligation to, but maybe you already
ahead.
Have.
There's a good chance that it's on the list already. So, but go ahead.
Okay. Secundium quid et simpliciter.
Oh, what the hell?
Secundium quid et simpliciter. That's it means basically it's an informal fallacy where you take a type of heuristic approach to something and you apply it ubiquitously. So, like, you take a generalization. Like all good people die young or something, you know, all great actors die young or something like that. You apply it across the board. So it's a type of hasty generalization, but it's a very good, it's an interesting one. And it sounds good in Latin, right? Secundium quid et simpliciter. Okay. So,
well, yeah.
You want to try?
That's why you chose that one.
Hasty generalization already. So.
Well, this is a specific use of it, but yeah.
Specific use of it, but we'll see if I come back to generalizations.
Sweet,
awesome.
I've done hasty generalization. Steve, I've done full biased generalization. So it's we'll see.
Cool,
sweet. Did you have upcoming things that you want to plug real quick, Steve?
I do have a couple upcoming things. I will be on the Atheist Community of Austin's Discord as a guest speaker at 2:00 Pacific, 4:00 Central this 13th, November 13th. I'll be taking questions for things, especially with relationship to my argument of the burden proof that all atheists have, including a lack of belief atheists. I've talked to the president of the ACA. He's very interested in it, and other people are very interested in it. I also will be doing, I just got invited to come back to Fully Deconverted by Ariel and his producers. They are talking about this particular argument. They're finding it very interesting. They seem to be tentatively agreeing with it as well, and they like me to come on and discuss it more. We haven't got a date for that yet, but I'll let you know. And I think Kyle and I both will be on Les Riff on the 20th. Will we not? I think we have something planned with the Geek Room.
Sure.
Okay, let's go with that. I have it on my schedule.
Possibly. So,
people don't know how busy we really are with this stuff.
Go ahead, Mark.
Every day we have like three schedules that they use.
That lack of belief is it the thing you posted on Facebook about how you need to justify not accepting a position by basically saying that, well, you need to justify, yeah. Why don't you believe? You have to be able to justify your reason why you can't believe. Yeah,
right. Exactly. And why you can't
and
assign
a lot of people
value to the proposition.
That. Exactly. The fact that you can't assign a truth
you agree with it,
to it justification. For it. Yeah, I do.
Okay, good.
When I first read it, I thought it sounded like, okay, you've gone off the deep end. But then I read it further.
I get it a lot.
Yeah.
I do get that a lot.
What's
funny is
getting at. I think the
I had a person just the other day say the same thing.
The way you phrased it probably is what causes a bit of backlash. I don't know how I would phrase it, but
yeah, I had.
But I got a sort of gut reaction to it that that was negative, and then I went into it and yeah, well, sure, I need to be, if I am asked the question, why don't I believe, of course I need to be able to answer that.
I think you did that by design.
I did. No, I definitely. There is some truth to that. I want people to have a visceral reaction to it because that's what acts them, gets them interested in it. But when they get past that, like I had somebody, literally this happened on my page the other day. They're like, Steve, you've gone off the deep end. You're a theist again or something like that. And then they actually just messaged me not long ago and they said, shit, I actually read your argument, you know, in detail and I can't find fault with it. So I mean, that initial visceral reaction is click. Well, sure, whatever, but it works. I mean, my argument, I want people to try to punch holes in it. That's how you have a strong argument. That's how you shore it up. And I understand they're gonna have a visceral reaction, but once somebody actually looks into it, it makes sense. It's derivative off some other argumentations that people have used. Dave S, very prevalent philosopher guy in the community. He didn't have a problem with it right out. He's like, this should be non-contentious. I'm like, well, you would think so. But I think what you're right, the way I'm wording it, there's a little contention there, but I don't know how else to word it without having contention. There's no possible way because people have been so ingrained to think a specific way about burden of proof that when I'm trying to explain it to them from an epistemological point of view, they have that entrenchment effect, right? But we got to let him get to bed, man.
Yeah, and when you started...
I feel bad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In your post there. I've gotten started now. So, you mentioned something about second order burden of proof, and then people are basically going like, "Okay, ivory tower horseshit." That's the reaction people get, and So my advice as a teacher would be work on your wording, but.
I have to disagree. I like the wording. The wording actually makes sense from a logical point of view. And this is why I'd ask Dr. Zemer, who's actually in charge of the Cal State Long Beach Mathematics and Logic Department, you know, is it improper to word it that way? He's like, no, absolutely not. It's like, that's what it is. So I want to be specific, but I that wording is going to have a backlash. I get that, but it's still correct. From what I can understand.
Yes,
so.
but if it's correct, but people don't get to see that it's correct because they're chased off by the gut reaction, then it might still, you know, you might want to sucker them in with something that's
candy.
Easily accepted. And then you hit them with the formal phrasing. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Okay, now I'm going to go to bed.
All right, go to bed, man. Right, thank you very much, Mario.
Thank you
great.
Once again for...
I love this. So thank you.
Yep. It's been fantastic. Guys, we'll see you tomorrow for a... Thank you. We'll see you guys tomorrow that are watching back here tomorrow. I see that Scotty's in the live chat. Hello, Scotty. We will see Scotty at 9:30 tomorrow where he will take on Red's Rhetoric right after Conspiracy Cats and Flat Earth Hero. Before that, Ad Homies. And until then, have a good night and we'll see you tomorrow.
Good night.